With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back, Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. We have a tremendous episode for all of you listeners today, as I am joined by a returning champion and dear friend of this podcast. It's Michigan State men's tennis head coach Harry Jayden, who joins me on the show today to help break down his team's dramatic 4-3 victory over the University of Illinois. Of course, that match happened this past Friday. It was one of the premier matches on this past week against college tennis schedule, and it really is symbolic, the result of the rise we've seen from this Michigan State men's tennis program over the past 12 months. It's been one of the biggest storylines we've had emerge in men's college tennis to see what Harry has done so quickly since emerging as head coach on the job. It's a testament to his work ethic, a testament to his talent, and obviously the result they earned this past weekend, not just their win over Illinois, on Saturday, not Friday, but their win over Northwestern on Sunday as well. His team is 18-3 overall. They're making a top 16 push. They're a team college tennis fans should get to know more about, and obviously I can think of no better person to help offer insight into this year's Spartans, into the rise of their program, than their head coach, the man who pulls all the strings behind the scenes, head coach Harry Jayden, who, again, offers us just the best sort of insight into everything that was happening on the grounds during that Saturday matchup, how his Spartans managed to pull through, and then, of course, we get to into what is a really exciting future on the horizon for this Michigan State men's tennis program. Obviously wanted to talk about the team's aspirations, not just here in 2024, but what Harry hopes to keep building upon the foundation they've established this year moving forward. And, you know, just again, more broadly, I've known Harry for almost two decades now. To have the opportunity to speak with him in his current capacity as head coach, it's still always just such a joy to me to see the success he has had. Can think of no person who deserves it more. So certainly appreciate having him on the show today. I am certain all of you listeners will appreciate the insight he offers in our conversation. Just a quick production note, by the way, to that talk, I got to step up my game here on this Cracked Interviews podcast. We've already hit senior day season in this 2024 college tennis year, and I just feel like I haven't done enough on this program to help inform all of you fans who might be looking for additional insight from the actors from this year's college tennis season. Not just them, by the way, the actors on the pro tour, players, coaches, whomever it may be. It's time for me to step up my game. I plan on doing so down the season's home stretch. I'll try to talk with one coach, one player from a premier matchup from every weekend of the college tennis season moving forward on this show. So expect a steadier schedule of podcasts moving forward here on this feed. Of course, we recap each and every week of the Division I college tennis world over on the Great Shot podcast feed. Those shows now live once again on YouTube. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we break down the Division I women's action. Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we break down the Division I men's action. So if you are intrigued by the college tennis universe, you want to learn more about everything that's happening, make sure you go check out that show either live 9 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesdays, Wednesdays on our YouTube channel, or you can catch the replay of it on our podcast. I guess you can catch the replay of it on our YouTube channel, or if you're on the move, you can go listen to it on the Great Shot podcast feed as well. So just a bit of an update of what our content will look like moving forward. Of course, we'll still have broadcasts Thursday, Friday, Sunday on ESPN Plus, highlighting all things Big 12, ACC, and SEC. Of course, Sundays, we'll have our Big Ten broadcast on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well. That's everything college tennis related on the horizon on our schedule here at Cracked Rackets. What's on the horizon today? A fantastic conversation with one of those actors from the 2024 college tennis season. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here's my chat with Michigan State men's tennis head coach, Harry Jayden. Joining us on the podcast once again today is a man I know best as a number one seed on the 2006 Michigan State Nike Tennis Camp draft board. Of course, now, though, we know him as head coach of the Michigan State men's tennis team, a team that earned their first victory over the University of Illinois since March 24th, 1997, this past weekend. Of course, I'm alluding to Michigan State men's tennis head coach Harry Jaden, who joins me on the podcast once again today. Coach, hello, my friend. It is good to see you. How are you feeling after what had to have been a very fun weekend for the Spartans?
Yeah, doing well. I'm tired. It was a tough back-to-back weekend traveling from Champaign to Chicago, but obviously really exciting for our guys to pick up two Big Ten wins. And, you know, we hadn't beaten either of those teams, Northwestern as well. It had been over 10 years since we'd beaten them. So, you know, they did something really, really cool for the program. And I just think in any year, if you beat Illinois or Northwestern, it probably signifies that you guys are doing pretty well. So it was exciting. I'm tired. We got a couple days off here and then kind of got to re-rack for Indiana and Purdue for senior weekend.
Yeah, it's crazy that we've already hit senior day season. I'm not happy about it. And look, again, there is a lot to be happy about on the other side for your Michigan State team here this season. And I want to catch up on a lot of those things here on today's show. But let's just start first again with this past weekend. First with you, I'm curious because you've played some doubleheaders in your day. People who don't remember should know that you were an NCAA double semifinalist as a player, and maybe that one run is your claim to fame here today, but we don't have to dwell on your own tennis past. We can talk about the coaching aspect. Is it more tiring in the coaching chair than it was as a player? Because I swear to God, watching the match, having no control, like for me, that's always worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think mentally it's definitely more exhausting being a coach because you're constantly bracing yourself for a lot of different things. Whether you win, what are you going to say to the guys if you lose? And especially in a match like that where it's on a razor's edge, you're kind of looking ahead, just preparing for the speech after the match. And then you're just trying to, with how heated it was, and Atkins Tennis Center is a very hostile environment. We're trying to keep our guys under control. So yeah, it was definitely a lot of mental work, but the guys did a good job of, you know, bouncing back physically and being ready for Sunday, but it took a lot on them. They're getting a couple of days off this week, that's for sure.
Are you a guy who uses quotes? Are you like F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, even good teams lose, or like, you know, things like that?
No, but in the pre-match meeting, we actually listened to one of your contemporary J-Tweet podcast, and we played that for the guys because, you know, I think a lot of the things they said on that podcast were true. And obviously, when you have a podcast talking about your match against a conference foe, that means good things because you're in the mix. But we definitely played them some of the clips about how, you know, we really needed to get a signature win, or we came into the season with a lot of hype and we needed to pick something up. So we definitely try to motivate the guys, and it worked.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, look, if we're not providing bulletin board material, we're not doing our job. So shout out to John Parsons and everything he's doing at NOAD, no problem. I love to hear that. I mean, then let's get into the signature victory itself. It starts, obviously, with the doubles point. And look, you know you've got a really good team, a top five team in the country in Ozan and Max Sheldon. And yet, you know, something you have elected to do at times throughout the season is split them up and try and mix and match. That wasn't the case in this Illinois match. You put them at the top spot, Seb and Ronnie at two, and, you know, Thanos Graydon at three. You know, what led to that decision today and going down 1-0? You know, what did you learn in those first 40 minutes?
Yeah, I think it even started before that. It was the me and Brad meeting before the match, and we both teams had practiced outdoors for the 3 or 4 days because of forecast. It was 70 degrees, but we didn't really look at the wind too much. And the wind was 1 mile per hour over the limit for an outdoor match. So an hour before the match, we decided we were going to go indoors because the rules called for it. So at that point, I was like, this is going to be a tough match, for lack of a better word, just with, you know, how big Illinois guys starting with Carlos can play. So we were a little bit worried about that. And I think in doubles, it really showed we just didn't put enough damn returns in the court. They served really well. They obviously got enough returns to get their breaks. And, you know, when we put Max and Ozan together because, you know, we really want to put them together for the stretch run. We feel like they're our best team or one of our best teams. And you know, we tried some different pairings, Sebastian and Ronnie. They'd done really well in the fall and they played a couple matches in the spring, but we thought, you know, they can either come with it or they're going to, you know, lose 6-0, which they had done earlier this spring. And they actually kind of fell somewhere in the middle, but you know, Heck and Rose played a really good match there. And then three doubles, Kenta and Matisse played a really, really good match, and we didn't serve or return. We returned actually better on three, but we didn't serve well. We didn't make enough first serves. We gave them a lot of second serve looks, and especially with those two guys on the other side of the court, if you give them second serves, they're going to put those returns cross court at your feet, and it's going to be tough to hold serve. So they get the doubles point. I told the guys, you know, take some deep breaths and you know, really just believe here. You guys wanted this moment. We've done really well in singles. Honestly, we've been probably 50%, it feels like, in doubles points all year. Maybe I'm wrong in that, but it feels that way. So go out there and get in singles. So I think they didn't panic at all, but they knew their backs were against the wall. They were going to have to focus for the first 30 minutes, no doubt.
Yeah. How did you feel they responded to the Atkins Tennis Center environment? Because it's one thing to play there as a prohibitive underdog, right? Like, you're not going to awaken the net nuts, as they call them, the Illini net nuts, but you came in as a top 20 team in the country. This match, we talked about it on our show. Again, Jay talks about it on his show. And by the way, one of the best rivalries of the 2024 season is you versus Jay on Twitter. In the most kind sense, by the way. I mean, yeah, in the most innocent sense, the sort of rivalries we love. But were your guys ready for that atmosphere? Do you think they needed that doubles point to get acclimated to it? And how do you think they responded to, again, what is one of the most hostile in the best senses? Like, it's a special environment always when you play at Illinois.
Yeah, for sure. No, so it's funny. When I was assistant coach, and I believe it was 2021, it was the COVID year. Mm-hmm. And we played Illinois on the road. Mm-hmm. And we walked into that place and they were playing Michigan at the time. We were practicing because we got there and they were playing Saturday, similar to kind of this week with Illinois schedule. But we just walked in there while Michigan was playing. It might have even been 2019, but it might have been before COVID. But we walked in there and I just remember it was a top 10 team when they had Fenty, Maloney, like all those guys. And then Illinois had Kova, Zeke, you know, that whole gamut of guys. And I just remember walking in there like, dang, this is we weren't
it's different.
You know, we weren't sniffing that, you know. Yeah. It was like, this atmosphere is crazy. I can't wait to play in that one day. And it's funny, you know, a couple of years later, we were kind of that in that same exact environment, that same building. But man, the architect of Atkins, I mean, it seems like everything's metal in there, so that it echoes, it's loud, and they got the net nuts going, and we got about. Luckily, we had a bunch of families come out of our guys, but we had about like three guys on our bench just trying to fend them off. But our guys, you know, they really loved it, and it was hot in there. It was loud. Everything was echoing off. But they did a really good job of you know, especially that first 30 minutes, you can kind of be disoriented because you just hear yelling after, you know, every court. It's like somebody wins a point and people are yelling. So you're, as a coach, you're kind of looking around like, where do I even go? But the guys really righted the ship, especially on the courts that we won in straight sets. They were kind of slower. Like, the first sets didn't finish until the other matches that we were losing were in their second sets. But they did a good job of holding serve and at least keeping it even and keeping us in that match.
Yeah, and you know, again, you guys drop the doubles point. You drop three first sets, but you're able to protect two of your leads. Straight set victories at 5 and 6. Three of your leads, but the Thanos match took a little longer, so we'll get back to it. But, you know, I think you and I spent the entire offseason talking about where I think Max Sheldon should be in your lineup. And obviously, he's at that number 5 spot. He gets a 4 and 6 win. David gets a 4 and 4 win over a really talented freshman in Jeremy Zhang. We always say, what's the difference between good and great? Depth. And to get those straight set wins at 5 and 6 for two guys who, again, like, they were a part of previous Michigan State teams that weren't of this ilk. For them to step up, embrace the role that they've been asked to play, what'd you see from them on this day?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like Max Sheldon went down 0-4 quickly, and I was worried about him. But he did the same thing against Nebraska last week, so we knew exactly what he needed to do. He just needed to put the dang ball in the court and just stop slapping. He goes for a lot early in matches. So we just kind of calmed him down. And then he really just started being more patient. That was good. And then David Say, I mean, that guy is really developed. He's a guy that's played so much tennis since last summer. I mean, he's playing pro tournaments every week. and you know, he's so match sharp, and now he's really starting to just learn how to take the emotions out of the match and just play every point the same way. So, you know, he's not a guy with the most firepower, but we were kind of talking about it on the bus with him. It's just so tough to win every point against him. He just makes it very, very hard. And he was going up against a guy in Jeremy Zhang that's almost like a spitting image, where he not much firepower, makes a ton of balls. Maybe Jeremy can come forward a little bit more. Maybe David's forehand is a little bit heavier. But it was those that match was physical. I don't know if it goes three sets, if David can hang in there, because it was so physical and so long. And obviously in the atmosphere and the energy in there was crazy. So those guys were physically really, really spent by the end of that match.
Yeah, and look, again, you guys get the straight sets there, so that's your two on the board. Heck got a straight set win over Homan, so it's kind of two all overall. And, you know, again, it was kind of leaning that way as Thanos was playing a 2.5 day first set, roughly. Yeah. It's, again, an approximation there. But just to give the context of the freshman and his performance on this day, he was in Greece, like 4 days earlier, 2 days earlier, whatever it may be, making the semifinals of a future. Yeah. What have you seen from the freshman? Because it's hard for any freshman to acclimate to college tennis successfully, but to do it coming overseas in a few days transition on the road, what'd you see from him on Saturday?
Yeah, he got a few wild cards to tournaments in Greece, so we just wanted to give him those opportunities. Obviously, he wants to be a professional player, and when you get main draw wild cards, it's tough to turn those down. So he flew out there for 2 weeks, did well, got 5 ATP points, got to the semis of one tournament, then flew back, and I think he got back Thursday. So he might have still even been jet lagged, but man, he is playing at a crazy level. I mean, in college, the only sets he's lost since January 19th is he lost a set to Jay Friend. They didn't finish the match. It was on serve in the third set. And then he lost a set to Noah Vukadin, the freshman from Clemson. Sure. So he's playing really, really good tennis and was excited for him to really get an opportunity at three singles, because it's tough at three singles. Sometimes teams don't have the depth, but against a player like Petrov, who's a really high level. And if Petrov's healthy, he's definitely, you know, ranked in the top 60, 50 of college tennis. So, you know, for Aris to step up, he really liked the conditions there. It was a little bit warmer in the facility. He was hoping for outdoors, but it was just bouncy courts. And when Aris sees that, his eyes light up, because he's got a freaking heavy forehand and a heavy kick. So he kind of was just trying to wear Alex down, but both those guys hit heavy balls, so they were swinging out of their shoes and they were having long rallies, which is why the match lasted so long. I mean, it was two sets, and I think it finished maybe 10 minutes before Ozan's match finished in three. So a little bit of contrasting styles on the court. They were next to each other on one and three. But yeah, completely different matches.
No, it was so impressive. And again, I think technically, scoreboard wise, it's not technically, literally, you guys were down 3-love overall on the scoreboard. And then again, you get the wins at 5 and 6. Thanos starts to work his way back. I still think the swing of the match, though, and we'll get to OU in a second, Ozan, if you're listening. But I think the real swing was that second set. That second set at 4. For him to take it 6-love was just kind of like a, hey, they're not rolling us with 3 straight sets. Matches like, hey, we're in this fight now. Did you feel that way in the building?
For sure. No, it was that. It was Sebi winning his second set was big, and that's when I started to actually. I was preparing for a losing speech at the end. Sebi wins the second set, and Ronnie was down a set and a break at the same time. When Sebi won the second set, Ronnie got his break back in the second set, and all of a sudden it looked like, you know, we were going to lose those two matches, and then we had momentum in those two matches, and we were like, wait a second, if Ozan flips his, we might win all six. We have an opportunity in every single court here. So that 5 minutes, even though we lost both Ronnie's and Sebastian's matches, I think the other guys were looking around and just like, oh, wait a second. It's not as tough of a path as it seems. So I don't know what the hell happened to Sebi in the third set, but Kenta just really played a high level. I mean, that was a tough performance from him. He was feeling something, and he just kind of locked down on the baseline and just really outlasted Sebi in the third set. But for Sebi to win the second set, that's what we told him after the match. It's like that really gave the other guys belief and just kind of gave us confidence. Even though we lost the match, it really got us back into it.
You got 2 days now off to watch the film and realize what went wrong in set three. So we'll worry about that here on these 2 days. But, you know, again, that's the context. And now all of a sudden it's 3-all. And you have two of the top 25 players in the country. Maybe that's not where they are in the rankings right now, but obviously I think Ozan's at 11. Carlos has to be near there as well. Look, I mean, you've mixed around your 1 and 2 all year long, and I actually think that's a very smart play, because I know I had a former number one performed. You know what? I'm just going to say his name. Ed Nagel once gave me this whole story on how in 87, he was clearly the best player on the team, but he played one all year long and Goldberg got to play two. And so Goldberg was fresh at the end of the season. And that's why he made his NCAA singles final run versus Ed losing in the quarters to Buff Farrow. There's your 1987 lesson for everyone to enjoy here on today's show. But like, to the point, I get why you would want to mix Ozan and Ronnie 1 and 2. Both guys deserve shots to sit at that top spot, build their ranking, etc. Ozan got the shot on this day. And just talk me through, especially, again, a kid from Lansing. He comes to Michigan State to play on a team like this, to have an opportunity, a moment like this. Talk to me about the gumption you saw from him to break for 5-4 and just that final service game. It just felt like he was just landing first serves. Like, it was a surprisingly simple closeout.
Yeah. So he, I mean, I was having deja vu to last year because we lost to Illinois last year, but it was Ozan and Carlos finishing the match out in a third set. And there were a lot of breaks in that set. It was a really funky match with two guys with bigger serves. You thought they would hold a little bit more, but you know, this one was like that. I mean, we were down 3-1 in the third set. Carlos got an early break against Ozan and Ozan was hanging around. I mean, he was getting deuce points in return games. But Carlos would come up with a big serve or a big forehand, and Ozan wasn't getting him. And at 3-1, it was a deuce point. And I was laughing with Ozan about it. The guys were just making fun of him. Ozan gets I think Carlos missed the first serve, so we got a second serve look on the deuce point. Ozan puts it in play. Carlos kind of puts a mid-court ball, like a forehand. He kind of rolls it like a neutral ball. Ozan's like 2 feet behind the baseline, and he just decides to chip a forehand and run in for no good reason. No business running in. And luckily, Carlos missed that passing shot, and we get the break back at 3-2 rather than it being 4-1. I think if that ball goes in, it might be a different story. You might be interviewing Brad right now. But he got the break there, and then my conversation with Ozan was like, man, if you're giving Carlos second serve looks, he's going to tee off and he's going to connect on a lot of those balls. So it was really, we were down love 30, I think, in the, gave him 2 second serve looks. It might've been the 3-all game or 3-4. I can't remember. We were down love 30. It was the deuce side. And I go to Ozan, I'm like, Ozan, you're aiming for aces on the serve. Bring your targets in 6 inches. You know, let's get first serves in play, still hit the crap out of it, but just get them in play so you can be ahead in the point. You're not playing defense off a second serve. And Ozan decides to hit a body serve, which is not what I said. And Carlos has a clean look at a forehand, rips it, and it just goes out, or rips it, and Ozan picks it up, wins the point. And I had a pretty stern conversation, like, don't give the guy body serves. He'll rip the crap out of those, man. Still go for, you know, big tier wide serves, but just bring it in. And so when Ozan did that, he wasn't necessarily getting aces, but I think he was just kind of getting Carlos out of position, and he was ahead in the point. But I think obviously later in the set, once it got to be fourth, I can't even remember if we were leading or I don't remember the exact score, but 4-3 or 4-all or whatever it was. I really think that there was something going on Carlos's side of the net, either fitness or he might have had like some type of foot injury or something. So he just wasn't able to hit his serve as well. So that was a bit of a bummer to finish the match like that. And obviously, you know, seeing that he didn't play the next day against Michigan, probably, you know, something happened there. So a little bit fortunate on our end and unfortunate for them, but it was a battle. And I think it was definitely a match that it would have been fitting for it to go to a breaker like it did last year. 6-7, 6 in third set, Carlos won it.
No, it was a beautiful moment. Again, just college tennis at its best. And certainly, you know, you kind of mentioned this earlier, but, you know, two things, I guess, just to put a final note on this match. One, again, Atkins Tennis Center gets loud. And yet down the home stretch, I heard a healthy amount of go green, go whites. Like, it felt like the Michigan State contingent showed up for this match. Yeah. Do you feel that at the tennis building?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, we have a good base of Midwest players on our team.
Sure.
And so, you know, their families came out. They knew it was a big match. So their families came out, and we did have a good bit of, you know, fanfare on our side. It still was, you know, pretty heavily, I'd say, you know, 75-25 Illinois fans. But it did get to a point where in that building, you just heard yelling. You didn't know what, especially when our guy's name is Ozan. And they're chanting something about Ozalans.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of confusing to hear whoever he was chanting for. And it was just loud. And it was college tennis. And it was a lot of fun for me. You know, that was probably, one of the few matches this year where we've really been in an environment like that on the road. I think about our Arizona State match and even our Arizona match earlier this year where we were on the road in an environment like that. And it showed. The guys were battle tested. They learned from those. We beat Arizona State. We lost Arizona. We learned from those matches and we were ready to go. But this was the first time it was indoors. And it was, that place is tough, man. That place is tough.
No, I look, at some point they're going to renovate it because that's just how Brad rolls. But I love the old, that Nielsen for Wisconsin, like those old industrial warehouses that were built for one thing, tennis and noise. Yeah. And it's just like, you don't get buildings like that anymore. Yeah. And so it's always a pleasure to play there. But, you know, again, we've kind of discussed the stakes of this victory for your team to beat a top 16 opponent. And, you know, dare I say, and I love you, Jay, a signature victory your team was looking for. There was no court rush. There was no celebration. Yeah. And typically in a moment like that, particularly in 2024 college tennis, like you're seeing a rush. Yeah. Was that tactical? Was that planned? Like, why didn't we see a rush from the guys?
That was a just a discussion amongst the guys. I mean, they really they decided at the beginning of the year, and I think they got it from, you know, Virginia, where Virginia is not really rushing the court. They might have saw when they beat Texas, they didn't rush the court. So our guys said, you know, we're not going to rush the court unless we win a championship. And yeah, I said it before. I've said it to a bunch of people. It's just our guys trying to act like they've been there before when they haven't been there before. So, you know, I see right through it. Probably the public definitely sees right through it. But the guys were obviously ecstatic. And to wrap up the weekend with another road win against Northwestern, it was a really, really successful weekend for our program and definitely one that we'll talk about. Hopefully was kind of a turning point for our program and also just good memories for the guys, especially our five seniors.
Yeah, well, look, to do the things your program wants to do this year, you have to play back-to-back days. That's how the NCAA tournament works. What'd you learn about the Sunday match? Again, a win over a Northwestern team that played Michigan really tight on Friday, a Northwestern team that's very much always in the NCAA tournament mix. You know, for your guys to come out, get a pretty comfortable Sunday victory, what does that say about them? What'd you learn?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back, honestly, to earlier this year when we played the Blue Gray Classic, where you play three matches in 2 days. And we played a tough match against Auburn, 4-3, came back from 3-1 in the semifinals. And we had to play Princeton the same day. Yeah. And so we played singles against Auburn, then we had to play doubles and singles against Princeton. And we came out flat. Obviously, we lost 4-0. They beat the crap out of us. They were way tougher than us because they had a 4-3 match against Alabama. It wasn't like they were too tired. I mean, they were more tired than us, but less tired. So they beat the crap out of us. And that was definitely a conversation that we had with our guys of like, hey, we've been here before where we're feeling it physically. And sure, we traveled this time, but the other time we played three matches in 2 days. So, you know, it's just not an excuse. And quite frankly, if you beat Illinois one weekend and you wrap the weekend by losing to Northwestern, you know, it probably is a push in terms of our ranking. And our guys really, they really want to be in that host spot for NCAA. So, you know, it kept us on pace. The guys, I mean, Northwestern came out firing. They won the doubles point and there were battles on all six courts. But luckily our guys, they stayed together and physically they lasted long enough to get the win and get the hell out of Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Then you can take that bus ride home. And, you know, for your team, you mentioned the things they want to accomplish. You're 18-3 overall. Like, you are on pace to do so many of them. And, you know, again, you've gotten to play Blue Gray Classic where you guys make the finals. You guys play Diablo College, where whatever that Arizona tennis event was, where you make the finals there as well. You know, obviously, ranking wise, your team is in places it has never been before, and you guys are going to be top 16, I'm pretty sure, when this week's rankings come out. What has this journey been like for you to have? Obviously, you know, there's the Merida elephant hanging over it all, where you're like, it could be even more special, but still 18-3 to have made a couple of finals at big events and just have the season you guys are having. What's that ride been like for you, my friend? Because I imagine it's been fun.
It's been fun. And as a college tennis coach and just a college sports coach in general, like you're always thinking about the next step. Like, who are we recruiting for next year? Obviously, we lose Ronnie, Sebi, Reed, Luke, Graydon. So we lose five guys this year. So you're always thinking ahead. But it was funny. I actually got a text from a guy named Luke Linder. He was the last person when we won in 1997. He was the last guy. He was the last guy on court. He clinched the match 4-3 in a tiebreaker. And he texted me after the match and he said, you know, hey, you know, I was the last guy to do it. And you guys beating them really kind of brought me back. And I just cherish those memories so much. So it was a cool text from a Spartan and a guy who'd been supportive of the program. And I it just kind of shot me a reminder of like, hey, you don't go into Atkins every year and you win. That's not going to happen. Don't expect that. So, it was really, really, just reset and just enjoy it a little bit. And even, this week, I'm going to tell the guys, cause it's senior weekend. You guys want your goals. Obviously we're trying to make a big run for the stretch run, but it's senior weekend this weekend. Make sure you guys are spending time with your family. We have a little banquet. We get together. It's meaningful and it's something that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. So I just want to make sure they're not taking that for granted because, you're always looking at the next match until there is no next match. And so trying to enjoy it. And man, I'll tell you what, I think Jay Tweed said it in his podcast. I was an assistant coach here and I think we won four. We were like, he brought the numbers out, man. Between 16 and 19, where I was assistant coach for three of those years, I was volunteer for one. So I was on the staff. We were 4-42 in the Big Ten.
It's tough.
We averaged one win a year those years. So for us to have four already is something that I think that those years where we were really struggling and they were fun. I have fond memories of them, but it puts all this in perspective. Like, yeah, going into a top 20 team's place and beating them, it's not a given, and you never know when it's going to happen again because you could be right back down at the bottom of the mountain pretty quick.
No, I can only imagine. And again, Dancer, it's a little different because he's active at Illinois, but guys who are on his team, I think of like the Schlegels of the world or like the Pfisters of the world or, again, all these guys you can point to throughout Michigan State tennis history. Have the troops rallied? Like, is that excitement? Like, you're feeling a buzz right now around the program?
Yeah, it's honestly hard to keep up with my phone.
Yeah.
Like, I have like three different group chats of people in different eras, like the 2010s, the 2000s, the 90s.
Yeah.
And, everybody's got to say congrats. And then all these damn guys, they got to put in their words of, what we need to do better, what's going on with doubles. So they got to get their cents in. And sometimes it's more like 5 cents, 10 cents, more than that. So
yeah, more than a penny.
But I'm always giving them crap and I'm always, poking fun at them. And yeah, they know it's all love and they've been very, very supportive and really excited because now they can go to friends and family and say, hey, I played at Michigan State, and the people, family will look that up and, oh, that's a top 20 program. So we got to keep that going.
Let me ask you this. Who do you listen to? Like, whose text is like, okay, this one gets the automatic response? Like, do the 2010s guys, because like, JP was your doubles partner, and I know him, so I don't feel bad saying, like, I'd be like, JP, shut the up. Like, we're rolling in the best sense possible, but thank you for the text. Like, versus, I'm sure there are some, again, for me, if Aaron Pfister told me to do anything tennis-wise, I'd be like, dude, you are so good. Like, of course I'll do that. Like, you're 100% seeing it better than I am. Like, I'm just curious if there is an elite inner circle.
Yeah, no, I mean, they all are pretty weighted, pretty even. But I really enjoy my chats with the 90s guys because those guys have like three kids now.
Yeah, that's the cool.
Fully dad mode. And so they kind of texted me congrats. And I said, hey, because they were the last guys to do it. I said, last time we beat those guys, you guys probably all celebrated at Rick's. and they responded, we were probably at Rick's the night before too.
So.
College tennis was a little bit, the sports science behind college tennis was a little bit different back then. So
that's what I want to know. I bet Brad was with them. He was on those 90s teams. That's great. Yeah. You know what? I want you to know every podcast is better with a Rick's reference. So shout out to you.
And that's one thing Ann Arbor and East Lansing guys, they can both appreciate.
Yeah, it's something we share. No doubt about that. It's a love of Rick's. I agree. But the reason I wanted to dwell on the buzz around the program is obviously the massive announcement. The donation, $10 million, and I don't want to mispronounce Joan's last name, so I apologize that I'm not saying
Sekia.
It. Yeah, Joan Sekia, thank you, who historic $10 million commitment to support Michigan State tennis. Talk me through what that commitment, again, means to you, your program, both now and moving forward.
For sure. I mean, first of all, Joan is, in my eyes, the GOAT. She's unbelievable. She is, I think, 81 years old, and she still gets out and plays tennis five times a week.
It's crazy.
First off, it goes to my predecessor, Gene Orlando. He was the one who bumped into her. It was a football fundraising event, and usually those guys, you're at a fundraising event for football, and you're a donor, and the tennis coach comes up with you. It's just, hey, how you doing? Congrats, da-da-da-da-da. And they move on. They're trying to get in with the football coach, the basketball coach, but – he bumped into her there, and she was a huge tennis fan. And from there, it kind of grew. And Really, really grateful to him for really throwing an alley-oop and you know, developing that relationship. But Joan's a big, big MSU supporter, and she's a big tennis supporter, and she believes in our vision, which is really, really cool to see. And she's really close with the guys as well. She's the unofficial grandma of the team or mother of the team. And so, yeah, I mean, you look at our program right now, I really feel like we got momentum in recruiting. I feel like we got momentum in results now that we're starting to put those on the board. And then, you know, one of the last questions we had with our program is, can we get momentum with facilities and things like that? So that's going to be huge. We were long overdue for a facilities upgrade. It's going to look really, really good. We're still kind of breaking down what it will look like, what it's going to be, but $10 million goes a long way. So, yeah, it's going to be huge for us. We're going to get some renderings here pretty soon. And you know every recruit and their mother is going to get a copy of those renderings. But it should be done pretty soon. I mean, our athletic director does want to move on it and put something together, especially just with how fast the landscape of college is changing college athletics. So, you know, why not get this done? Because we already know, you know, we have the money. It's earmarked for tennis and a facilities upgrade. So let's get it done.
No, they're going to put the blueprints on Instagram for public thoughts. Yeah. Can community note it and say, actually, court six is going to look a little better here. Does that mean they're going to play court one somewhere new? Because, like, playing on those courts for the court one event, again, when you were a seed in the qualifier and you got to skip the first week, like, that's a rite of passage. I don't even know if they still do that 15 years later, but I hope so.
No, they still play court one at Michigan State. And, I mean, in the 14s tournament. Even the 12s. And yeah, that will be, we got to mention that in the facilities meeting, that holy,
can't be compromised.
Yeah. That holy thing cannot be taken away from everything that grows up in the Midwest. You spend your summer from, you know, June 14th to the 21st in East Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah,
and, yeah, man. That'll be on the discussion board to make
sure. It's actually very true. It's like, if you were a Midwest kid, especially, like, I want to say 2006 to 2012 was the peaks of SEMTA and Midwest, all those powers, and, like, again, when it was the full two weekend qualifier draw, if you were a block seed and you didn't have to play that first weekend, you're like, oh no, I'm gonna be in Lansing playing court one. And so again, it's still the same courts from when I played on them. So to your point, very much, I mean, there's been resurfacing, of course, but it's so great to hear the upgrade. And again, it speaks to what you guys are building here at Michigan State. And I'm just curious, do you feel the buzz immediately in recruiting? I know I've asked you about recruiting, the direction it's heading right away, but, like, is it a little easier to be like, hey, come join the number soon to be, we'll say, what is it right now, 18 team in the country? Like, come join the 18 team in the country.
Yeah. There's definitely more interest, but the damn issue is that every team, every player we talk to really get us at that level, because obviously we're kind of hanging in that top 20 area right now. We want to get into the top 10. Every recruit we're talking to, you know, they're talking to the traditional blue bloods in college tennis. And we're not competing against the same teams we were competing before in recruiting. So, you know, when you're competing against the Tony Breskys of the world, the Adam Steinbergs, and those types of guys who have, you know, won national championships, you're running into a buzzsaw sometimes. So it's not all, you know, rose colored with recruiting. We've got to continue to work there, but, you know, we'll get our players in, we'll get our guys that fit our culture and want to play professional tennis. And we're going to be competitive for years to come.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Well, then my last two questions for you are this year's team. Let's just start with the obvious. How good are you guys? Like, have you hit your ceiling yet? We're in April. It's April 1st as of this recording. This is not an April Fool's Day prank. This is a legitimate question. Is this team top 16 good?
I believe so. I mean, we've barely even played our full lineup. Aris Thanos has been a part-time college player. He played Davis Cup. He played the Greek futures, and we've had a few injuries. So honestly, we haven't been really 100% healthy. We've shown our depth with our 7 and 8 guys playing. But I think we are. I think especially, you know, our top three are, I think, good against anyone. You put us up on top three, Ronnie Holman can beat anyone, Ozan Barsh can beat anybody, and people are starting to get into realize Aris Thanos can beat anybody. And then you have guys like Sebi Collard, who's, you know, won conference title after conference title and knows what it means to compete in late April and May. And then, you know, guys like David Say and Max Sheldon, where they play their best in the biggest moments, and it's really tough to beat those guys on the back end of the lineup. So, you know, we really believe so. But as I tell the guys, we can talk about it all we want. And that's kind of your job, not my job. But we're excited about it, and we really do think that we can really compete on the national stage this spring.
Yeah, well, I you know what? I'm going to add a bonus question on that because I'm going to ask you to take my pundit job at the end here. But the follow-up to that is, with that expectation in mind, I'm just curious, and I know we still have some time to go. What has been the biggest thing for you this season in coaching a team like this? Like, is it different? I know that sounds very blunt. And look, it's a lot of similar, familiar faces. And I really don't want to overlook guys like Luke or Green. Like, again, guys who have had to accept different roles on this year's team. Luke was playing three singles a couple of years ago. Now, again, you know, that's just not the case. How different has it been for you approaching a group like this this season?
Yeah, I mean, we've run into a lot of issues, good issues, but just things we haven't come across in the past. And I've just really, I mean, the thing that I've realized is the air is just so thin at the top. Like, you know, when you're battling between 75 and 50, one big win gets you over the hump, you know, and then you're in the top 50. But it's really thin up here. Little things make a huge difference. Yeah, and at the same time, also just remembering where I was. I mean, if there's a program you could say that got it out the mud, as the kids say these days, I mean, we got it out the mud. I had, you know, a winless Big Ten season and a one for Big Ten season. So we've taken a share of our whoopings, and it's nice to be on the winning side of those, and you just can't take that for granted.
No, no doubt about that. Yes, you've been humbled. There's no doubt during the times. I guess the bonus question is, you know, again, in this same spirit and same vein of, you know how good your guys are. You want to see them get a shot against the best this year. I really think this season in college tennis, the quality is better than it has ever been. Like, just the gap between even the 46th ranked team and the top ranked Buckeyes. Like, just do I lean Ohio State on a day like that? Of course. I think there's four teams, I'll say them, Ohio State, Virginia, Texas, TCU. They maybe have the benefit of the doubt, but that's as far as I'll go, because genuinely it feels like on the right day, anyone can get 4-3'd. Like, you look at Cornell this past weekend, who I know you guys have faced. They just beat Columbia this past weekend. It feels like there's a 4-3 match in every conference everywhere on any given day. And just like a Kentucky team that's lost twice that didn't even make the national indoors.
Yeah,
I don't know what to make of it. Again, I'm going to ask you to put on the pundit hat here. What do you make of this year's landscape?
I mean, I really think it's just, this is the last year of the COVID years. And so you have, you know, guys that are in their fifth year of college tennis. So they're just more mature. They're competing hard. You know, the transfer portal is obviously a big thing. So some teams were able to get richer on the transfer portal. But yeah, some of these teams, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, I just look at, you know, a team like Texas's roster and I'm just like, damn. And they've lost matches this year, which is crazy. So they've got a great team. Obviously, Ohio State, Virginia, TCU, the ones you've mentioned. But you just know the teams like Tennessee, Kentucky. I mean, we played Arizona. Those guys are dogs. So you're when you're competing in that top 16 range, you're running in some really, really good teams. So it's exciting. And then also we're really excited for next year as well. Just we feel like there are going to be a lot of guys graduating all around on our team as well. And there's going to be an opportunity for, you know, a fresh start for a lot of teams, and maybe for some of the younger guys to get some shine that haven't been able to play as much.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating. Like, it's been such a fun season. And yeah, again, pick a team out of a hat. It does feel like on any given day, like, I think Oklahoma's like 16-2, and it's like you guys are like 18-3 now. It's just like there are these teams floating. F San Diego, what they've done this season, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, more than anything, though, I do feel like there will be some jersey numbers from this year's team hung up in the rafters at whatever the new Michigan State outdoor facility looks like, because certainly this has been a special season. And, you know, again, I made the joke at the start. I can take us back to 2006 when you were that number one seed on the draft board for the Michigan State Nike tennis camp. It was you, I want to say Fisher Sutherland. I don't remember who the others were. But I just remember also, like, I want you to know, I don't think any version of me, no, 2011 me was higher on Alex Domajan, but then 2006 me was buying every piece of Fisher Sutherland stock. Like, my, like,
Here's
talk about an unbelievable 13-year-old. Just, you were just like, oh my God. One of the better ones Northern Michigan produces. But we'll save that discussion for a different time, I suppose. By the way, you know who the only person in Michigan high school tennis history is to win a match 0-0 without dropping a point.
Come on now.
Join me on today's show.
Fun fact, no mercy on these guys.
Yeah, was it Liggett? Who was it against? It's in the record book.
It was. It might have been Jackson.
No, that's what it was. It was. Yeah, that's a. That's good. That's ruthless. And it speaks to why maybe you do what you do today, why your team is having the success that they are. So, Harry Jaden, congratulations to you in the Spurs. Actually, you know what? I rescind that congratulations. We're not going to celebrate yet. We don't rush the court here early until you won a championship. We're going to act like we've been there before. So, on that note, though, I do always appreciate the chance to chat with you. So, thank you for joining me today, my friend. And good luck to you guys and the Spartans moving forward, obviously. I'll say it. Go green.
Go white. Love it. Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
Hope all of you enjoyed my conversation with Michigan State men's tennis head coach Harry Jaden. A thank you to Harry, as always, for taking the time to chat. I alluded to this in the intro, but he's a guy I've known for more than a decade, and to see the success he's had, it's so well-deserved. So, obviously, a congratulations to him, the Spartans, and what they have already accomplished here this season. Obviously, as we alluded to at the end of that episode, they think the best is still on the horizon. We look forward to watching them try to accomplish all of those dreams throughout the remainder of this year, of course. As I also alluded to in the intro, we're going to have more conversations like this moving forward. I will do my best to track down a coach, a player from hopefully every signature result we see the rest of the way here in this college tennis season. All those conversations will be hosted here. Of course, we'll recap each week's action over on the Great Shot podcast feed and live Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well. So for more college tennis content, those are the places to look. Of course, make sure you like, rate, subscribe, review to this podcast, the Great Shot Podcast, our Mini Break podcast feed, as well as our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel. Of course, a shout out and thank you as always to the tireless efforts of our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, who as always has a of an editing job to do day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout out to him, a shout out as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products out there. With that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, the amazing Michigan State men's tennis head coach, Harry Jaden, and from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You've been listening to another edition of the Cracked Interviews Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy. See you all soon. Thanks, everyone.